This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome inside the War Zone, the Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective. I'm JT, alongside my partner here on the show, Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
Doing good. We're getting a little bit of consistency going on.
We are. It's nice. I'm enjoying it. It's like, I know, every Wednesday I'm penciled in to chat with you, whether it's inches of snow that are falling outside or dealing with Providence basketball losses that keep me off the ledge talking to you, so I'm excited. But I was also excited to hear you are open to talking WCW, by the way. That was hot.
Yeah, that took a couple takes, but I enjoyed recording that. Tried to give some oomph to the proceedings.
A lot of oomph. So yeah, check that out. That's a new show on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. Jennifer, Tim, and Greg. The first episode was breaking down Arn Anderson, which we, of course, have done a lot for. Although, we do have words, because they were acting like no one's ever talked about that Flair Sting, that Arn, what the fuck, Arn Flair match from Nitro?
Was that Arn Flair cage match, yeah, from the October. They unearthed this hidden gem that
we reviewed like 6 months ago.
Broached before, yeah.
Anyway.
Is it actually snowing at your house?
So we had what are called snow squalls. Which is like basically it's almost like a quick hit like storm that would pass through, like if you think of a rainstorm that hits for like 20 minutes with heavy wind and everything, except it's snow. So it's like freezing cold, snow falling, wind whipping, snow sideways, and it only would be like 20 minutes, but like a legit inch of snow will fall like in that 10 to 20 minutes, you know what I mean? So it's just like a real fast hitting storm. So I was supposed to go to New Hampshire for a meeting today, and we ended up stranging it to the phone because we don't want to be driving home with those things hitting. And I did hit it on my way home from the office. So anyway, it's not like a major storm, but it's just bad enough where it like, I think in Philly, they said there were like fatalities and multiple car pileups from those things. So they're pretty dangerous when they hit.
So yesterday, all schools pretty much in Metro Atlanta were off because they were predicting some snow. It was going to start at like 8 or 9. It was kind of like what you're talking about. It was like a quick line. And the temperature never fell below like 40. It was like hovering around 38, 39, 40. So it was just a cold rain and was over in like an hour. And then that was it.
Was there a lot of anger? Because up here, there's a lot of anger when they
cancel
school.
There's a lot of anger. I mean, I don't know. They can't never get this right because, you know, we had the snowpocalypse in 2014. And that was. But honestly, driving home that day was the most harrowing experience of my life. Mm-hmm. Like, I did not know if I would make it or not, and it took me 8 hours to get home, and it was awful. It was absolutely awful. So that created an overcorrection, but then we kind of went back, and last year, you know, we usually get snow in January if we're going to get it. Last year, we had early December is when we got like 10 inches. It was like one of the biggest snowstorms of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one beforehand where they were like, it may snow, it may not. So I actually went to work that day. And then as soon as it started like flurrying and looked like it was starting sticking, I was like, I gotta go. I gotta leave. So, but a couple of the buses didn't get out in time. So it created a whole nother mess. So it's like either they predict it's going to happen and cancel school and nothing happens, or they say it's a possibility but don't do nothing and then it's mayhem. So
yeah, I think they almost have
it's
to.
It's a mess.
The same thing has happened here too. I mean, the same thing's happened here where, you know, they weren't canceling. They got whacked with a big one. Buses were stuck for 8-9 hours on the highway and everything else. And now they overcorrect and people get mad. They're like, oh, we canceled school for this. This is nothing. They're just getting everyone excited. But it's like, yeah, but isn't that better than the opposite where they they don't fucking do it? And then, you know, it's like a monster blizzard comes through and everyone's caught off guard. It's like, I prefer the overreaction to the underreaction and stuff like this. Like, I'd rather they bag it and you change your plans and then nothing happens versus, you know, like, oh, sorry, we didn't know it was coming. And then you just get blasted with something. But
yeah, I mean, I mean, the same people that complain about that are usually the ones that take their kids out for a week to Disney World. So it's like, well, what, you know?
Well, yeah, because they used the week for that and didn't want
to. It's like you're missing this educational time. Well, okay.
Well, no, it's more because actually, well, the bigger issue up here is because of the makeup. So, like, if they miss a lot, teachers and parents, like, they get mad because then, you know, you're adding days.
Well, they have a few days built in, though, right? I mean, I know Jennifer and them, they have, like, 3 days built in.
Yeah, but up here, that's not much. And I know that's what
I'm saying for us. Like, I mean, three days is a lot.
I know there was talk of, I don't remember if it went through or not, there was talk of, like, changing it so, like, basically you would just chalk it up even beyond that and just, like, make it up with, like, take-home shit. You know what I mean? Like additional stuff like that or... if there's going to be a snow day, like take it, they give additional work. It's something along those lines where it's like, and then you just punt the day. They've also had years where they've like canceled like April vacation to not have to stay later in June or whatever. So,
well, that's what like, you know, like my work yesterday, our offices were closed, but you know, the email was like, it's your expectation. You're working from home unless your power's out. Right. So I kind of ruin the old snow day, so
that's how it is now. But on the flip side, it makes it less like, for me, the work from home is a nice thing where it's like, well, now I don't have to risk, you know, the potential death drive-in or whatever. And to me, it's like, it's we, I like, I don't know, a job ago, probably like 6 years ago, whatever, one of the VPs, like, he would never be around unless it snowed. He was sure to be there, like head counting, you know what I mean? Like, you would never see the fucking guy. But when it was snowing, he was there in the building and like buying guys. Oh, we're gonna buy pizza for everyone that showed up and, you know, make a note or whatever. But to me, it was always like the expectation. If you have the ability to work from home, it's almost like, why am I gonna spend, you know, double, triple the time I commute driving in? I don't get in until say 9:30, 9:15, and I'm pissed off. And then I gotta drive when I could just be online, safe and comfortable working at 8. Like, you know, like, you just, isn't that more productive, you know?
Yep. Anyway. Old school mentalities die hard with us on people.
Hopefully they die soon. All right. So speaking of working from home, who was working from home, that was an awful segue, was Vince McMahon and Jerry Lawler, because they're at Raw in Richmond, Virginia. And we're going to start there this week, Chad, because we started with Nitro last week, and this is the December 4th. We are, I think, what, 2 weeks away from In Your House now? We got two more Raws?
Yeah, two more Raws. This one and then next week's, which is the Go Home, which they announced a pretty big non-title match for next week. So, I don't know. We'll get into it. But, so, yeah, we are from Richmond, Virginia. A very dramatic opening from Vince tonight. It says, tonight the IC title's on the line. I know Dee Douglas is a heel, but I do feel like Vince sort of gets him more pot shots on Dee than he does most everybody else, because, like, the way he talks about it in the opening, he talks about, like, Dean had a proverbial cup of coffee with the Intercontinental title belt, you know, like, I don't know, it's just the way he spins it, you know, I mean, because with somebody else, you could spin it, like,
right.
I mean, with Bob Backlund, they say, like, former world champion, and I know he had it for four, you know, whatever, 5.5 years, but he also only had it for, like, 4 days, so that wasn't exactly a long title reign either, but it's kind of
interesting. I think it's a click interesting influence. Click influence.
Yeah, because he also calls him the 15-minute chomp later on in the thing, so it's a little odd that he does that.
Yeah, no, I think he's probably done with Dean, and things just went sour and south quick, and I think the click got in his ear with all that stuff. So that's it. I think he's.
So we also get like quick 30-second promos from Sid and Marty, and they're not looking at the camera. It is just really odd, the aesthetics of these promos, where they're kind of looking off camera and talking. Marty says he's going to light Sid up, so there you go. He's fired up.
Mm-hmm.
And then our opening video plays, and we don't get Vince and King at ringside. We kind of jump right into Bob Holly versus Davey Boy Smith with British Bulldog's entrance.
Mm-hmm.
So we get our first match right out of the gate.
I feel like we haven't seen Bulldog. When's the last time we saw him in action? Was it that Jannetty match, or was it a?
I think so. Now, I was actually thinking for Holly too.
Oh yeah, yeah. He comes and goes. He's a I mean, he's a guy since his debut. Like, he'll vanish for months, and then they'll Hello? Give him a little mini push. It's weird.
He was on the 11. I'm showing he was on the 9. Was he on the 11?
Oh no, I'm sorry. Who? Holly or Bulldog's Bob last match Holly. Was against Jannetty on 11/6. So we haven't seen him in a month.
Okay, well, Bob Holly's was 9/18.
Yeah, I believe that. So, we did see him in Survivor Series.
Almost 3 months all Raw. It's like he's like more sporadic than The Undertaker. That's just so weird. So Holly gets a fast start. And I thought King had pretty good commentary during this match where he talks about how Davey Boy Smith may be overconfident. Bulldog regroups on the outside, kind of clears his head with Cornette. Lawler and Vince bring up that Davey Boy Smith has never been beaten by Bret Hart, so they're continuing that narrative heading mm-hmm. into the pay-per-view. Holly gets a power slam for two. And then, in our proverbial, hey, we're recording the commentary live, Jerry the King Lawler brings up that the Redskins beat the Cowboys the day before, which I looked it up, and they did. It was like 21-17. So there you go. There we go. Davey Boy Smith crotches Holly, and then Vince asks for a DQ off of that, which I thought was a really weak that would have been a really weak DQ. Bulldog offense looked good here on as a heel with a suplex, a slam, and a leg drop. I thought Bob Holly hit a nice drop kick to slow him down and get a hope spot. But then he follows that up with a rough-looking back elbow and a drop kick that hit mostly air. And another kind of pop culture bit, King talks about Chris Darden having a movie being made about him. He says Clarence Mason should play him because he actually wins his cases. So,
if only he knew, it would actually be Sterling K. Brown that would be playing that.
right. Predicted it ahead of time.
Yeah.
Bulldog catches Holly. So Holly's basically in the middle of his comeback. He goes for a dive. Bulldog catches him and in the power slam position and then pins him.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought they made the power slam look good as a kind of equalizer finisher.
That yep.
He could hit from pretty much any spot and get the victory in. I thought this was a decent enhancement match, actually. I went 2 stars on it. I thought Davey Boy Smith looked good again. And Bob Holly's kind of the right level of opponent you can do this type of match with.
Yeah, I went 2 as well. It was an interesting matchup here. Bulldog's been on that role, like we said. Now, like we mentioned, we haven't seen him on Raw in a month, but he's been active. His presence is there. And he continues to really be one of our MVPs, Chad. Like, we've talked about it since we started when he turned right before SummerSlam. He's really been one of the brightest spots on Raw and in the WWF as a whole with his heel character, with his work with Cornette, and his positioning overall. His ascent to the main event level has been very credible. So it's always good to see him out here. And, yeah, Vince dives right into the problems that Brett's had in the past with Bulldog, talking about SummerSlam. King mentions that Diana is behind her husband fully this time, as you remember back in England. In 92, she was kind of split between her brother and her husband, but now they're really positioning her almost as a full heel with Bulldog backing him in the match. I thought Holly hit a nice tight power slam for 2 out of the beginning. I like the douchebag spot with him crotching him across the top rope. King, again, takes a lot of shots to the Hart family throughout this, and then we get the Chris Darden mention, like you said, and then we get the float over to the power slam. This is a tidy match. Nice warm-up for Bulldog. Holly's fine. He's good in these spots. Competitive squash. 2 stars. Nice showcase for Bulldog as he inches closer to getting that, another shot at the world title.
During this match, Vince mentions Bob Backlund's in the crowd. King says he's going to do an interview with him. We see a clip from Backlund putting the crossface chicken wing on Bret Hart last week. And then he also locks it in on JR on the Superstars. So that was pretty amusing, seeing Jim Ross flailing off of the crossface chicken wing. And then they also announced it's going to be Bret Hart versus Bob Backlund in a non-title match next week. Bob goes nuts at that. I guess he wanted a shot at the belt. And then,
so he has dreams of being a god again, yes, so he can reign supreme over the plebeians.
Yes, yes. So I had this is a quote. I had dreams of being god again so I could reign supreme over all the beings and put them in the right frame of mind. So a pretty completely nutso promo from Bob. Yeah. The people behind him have a great, like, WTF look on their face, like, what is going on? Bob just sort of rattles off, and eventually he gets cut off and then goes looking for the sound engineer.
I like this. I mean, I think Backlund's great with this stuff, but it is weird that we're suddenly reheating him. He really hasn't been relevant since Mania and you know, as a threat. So it's weird that I know that it's trying to kill a couple weeks, and they do this a lot on Raw where they have these mini angles kind of just housed right within here. But it's weird they got him attacking Jim Ross again. It's something like they're trying to dial it back to a year ago where he was doing all the stuff with beating up, you know, attacking people and everything and being crazy. So it's just, it is an odd reheat for him. When I do think there's a bunch of younger guys on the roster, they could have slotted in here for a brief 2 week spell. But instead we get Backlund, which again, I'm not going to complain because I like Bob and I love the crazy old man gimmick, but I would have preferred maybe Bob like backing someone against Bret because he hates him so much. So like put a youngster in the slot against Bret and Backlund's like in his corner, you know what I mean? And help soften Bret up or something like that.
Yeah, you probably, I mean, I don't, well, I mean, he's about to job on a hog pen match, but, you know, why not put in somebody like Hemsley?
Right.
For just a quick feud or something like that. I don't think that would have been bad, you know, losing to Bret competitively actually elevates him. Yep. I mean, I think Backlund is a better character than Sullivan, Kevin Sullivan, mm-hmm. certainly. But it did, like, watching this, it did feel like some of those Kevin Sullivan promos for me, where it's like, man, this old dude's taking up a lot of time here, and I don't know if that's really the best use of it, even though he's, I mean, like, the quotes are good, but it's, I don't know. I mean, it's like, what's the end game? Bret beats him again?
Right. It's to eat time, right? To give Bret a win, yeah. Showcase him. That's not against a jobber. That has a little bit of meaning because there's a rivalry there. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, but again, it's just played. Like, he beat him at Mania. Backlund's done nothing since. There had to be someone else that could trot out here for a two-week thing. I know Jarrett just came back and they're trying to protect him, but even he could have been okay. Like, you know, him losing to Bret wouldn't have been that bad, but I guess if they want to protect him, I don't know. I guess it's Douglas, too cooked. Lafitte's gone. I'm trying to think of who else is around. No fucking Yankum, please.
You know, we haven't seen Goldust in a while.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to have him lose either. He's got big
stuff. No, I don't think you want him to lose, but I mean, I mean, it's like we talk about, like, and we'll get to the end. I mean, this is one of my critiques of this show. I did not like this role. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the biggest thing to me was you had no Bret, no Shawn, no Diesel on this show.
Right.
So, I mean, that's probably your three biggest stars, and none of them are on the show. And it just suffers.
How about Yoko for the spot?
Yeah, Yoko would have been good, and that's a reheat of a feud, too.
But
yeah,
it's an older feud, and you can say he's doing it to help Bulldog, right? Cornette 6 Yoko on him.
I definitely take Yoko over what we get here.
Yeah, a couple options that could have worked. I do like this, though. Doc is in the Slam Jam Center. It's one of my highlights of the week every week. He says that Diesel signed Owen Hart's open contract that Owen was bragging about, so they'll fight it in your house. Diesel looking for revenge for Sean. So.
Right.
I thought it was a decent tie-in.
Yeah, that was fine. Doc was excited. That think then we get our second match, mm-hmm. Which is Fatu versus the Brooklyn Brawler. Brawler attacks right away. I mean, this is a squash where Fatu then makes his comeback. He actually does a variation of the Diamond Cutter, which was kind of weird.
Yeah,
looked pretty cool. And then he hits his big splash and wins. They seem to tone down the making a difference thing. Mm-hmm. Vince only mentions it right at the end, and I mean, he's in no program right now, so you talk about somebody just sort of treading water is making a different spot too.
Yeah, I'm trying to think when they do the stuff with his family members. I think that might be in 96. They start to build towards something and then it just kind of dies on the vine. So, but yeah, no, the making a difference stuff, it definitely seems to be toned down. He's just kind of out there as himself. Yeah, the cutter looked good. I think he does that a bit in here. So I guess he just lifted it from DDP, but, I would a quarter star.
Yeah, same.
And I apologize. I jumped the gun. The slam jams after this. I skipped it.
Right, right.
My screen jumped. Then, I apologize.
Sorry, right, we'll forgive you. Also, Bob catches up to the sound engineer and puts him in the crossface chicken wing. So there we go. Because yeah, what happens is they cut the dog. He's dancing and getting ready to make the announcement, and then Vince cuts him off. He's like, "Oh, we got something going on out here." And then you see Bob with the guy in the crossface, and then they go back to Doc. So.
I will say they did try to come up with some creative ways to make this shit seem live. Like, they would every week they would cut off Doc with Vince. You know what I mean? Like, to make it like something. What's going on, Vince? You know? like they would always do this those kind of trickery to make it think like at least like they're kind of in the moment with everything going on. So they were trying to make it seem live. Whereas, like, back in the day, I feel like the syndicated stuff, they didn't really make the attempt to even feign it, but here they at least do.
They do on one hand, but I do think, like, going to the first break, we did see a clip of the Sid versus Marty match coming up, so mm-hmm. It's like they can't make up their mind, so I don't know. They're kind of all over the place.
But they have gotten away from that overall.
Yeah, I think that was the first time we'd seen the clips of what's happening, or, you know, next week, and they show clips of the match that's happening next week. We hadn't seen those in a while. So now it's our big Intercontinental Championship match. It's Dean Douglas versus Razor Ramon. Dean attacks right away, goes to use the IC belt, but is grabbed by Earl Hebner. Razor hits a fallaway slam and a clothesline to the outside. I thought the crowd was pretty dead for this, kind of showing where Dean stands. Razor throws his vest on Dean. Razor has Sean taped on his boot. Kind of a weird tribute, but okay.
It was terribly cheap looking too. It was like a piece like masking tape.
Yeah, it was just like just a piece of tape, kind of dangly hanging on to his boot with Sean written out. I couldn't quite understand what happened here, where Dean just started like selling weird, and then Vince says he has back problems.
Right.
And he was very slow going on offense, but I didn't quite. What happened there?
Well, he's had real back issues, so he may have actually gotten hurt during the match because he's supposed to fight it in your house, like we'll see, and doesn't, and then he's pretty much done. This might actually be the last match we see him. So I think he actually had a back injury, so it may have happened here because he does start walking really gingerly, and Vince calling it out. In retrospect, he probably knows because they're doing the commentary later, right? So he may have hurt himself in this match, I think. Because then I don't know if he even wrestles again. I can check quick, but this might be his last match.
Okay. We go to a break. When we come back from break, right as we went to the break, Dean did a splash on Razor's back. We come back. He's in the abdominal stretch. Dean's using the ropes for leverage. He gets caught. And then he goes for it again. Razor reverses. Dean gets a hip toss and hits another splash. That Razor rolls through for a near fall. Then we get our second Lawler. Hey, we're live recording this commentary. And this was a great political line where Jerry says, Army and Navy were fighting so hard because the losers had to go to Bosnia. So it's quite the political commentary, and even Vince piled on that. He was like, oh yeah, well, a lot of people are disagreeing with the direction of that or whatever, so there you have it. Clothesline and Razor's Edge wins it for Razor. I thought this was a little disappointing, actually a pretty good bit disappointing. I didn't think Dean looked like a threat much at all, which, you know, that's kind of where he's at right now. Even Vince calls it a decisive victory for the bad guy. And Razor, I mean, Ramon and Scott Hall, whoever, he's kind of an interesting worker where around this period where I don't think he's bad, but I don't think he's really that motivated. And so we're getting a lot of these. I mean, this got enough time that I think if you'd have had a motivated Ramon. It could have been something better than it was, but as it was, I just wanted a star in three quarters. I thought it was, you know, pretty decent, but really disappointing.
So it looks like this is Douglas's. So he has this match. He has a jobber match on the next night on the Superstars taping. He shows up there, and then he fights in Philly on the 24th, and that's it. Then he starts getting subbed in MSG on the 25th. It says subbed for an injured Dean Douglas. And then In Your House is the last time we see him. So this is the last match we're going to see of his.
So farewell.
Yeah. Well, we'll see him in In Your House. He's there. Oh, he just doesn't wrestle.
He's there.
But yeah, so I think he really did. I think he probably got hurt during this. I think it's pretty clear because he's aggressive early. Like he attacks and he's on the move. I liked Razor's dark blue tights here, by the way. I thought it looked pretty cool. and Douglas looked in good shape too, physically. Like, you know, he's toned, he's kind of ripped a little bit. So it sucks if he did get hurt in the match. He hits that shitty looking bulldog off the middle rope. And after that is when he starts to move gingerly. So I really wonder if something like maybe jacked his back up on that move or something like that. And Vince notes it, like you said. Razor makes a quick comeback, hits the edge. Really lame for Dean. But again, it's hard to count it because if the injury did come into play, but even then, I feel like it probably would have still been a pretty decisive loss, I'm sure. So that's it. Vince even calls it decisive. So paint by numbers. Douglas basically was no better than Bob Holly on this night in this match. I went 2 stars here.
Yeah, it's kind of it pretty much for Dean being any sort of a threat. Pettengill calls Brett versus Backlund next week the champion versus the candidate. And then we get our Brother Love segment with King Mabel. Mabel fumbles over his words, saying he's missing Serbo. I mean, just a fumbling mess to begin. We do get the announcement. Had they announced that the In Your House match was a casket match? Or?
No, I think this might be it.
Okay. Well, we at least know that from this.
Right.
And I did think, so Mabel fumbled at the beginning, but I did think he had a pretty good point that he was the first man to pin the Undertaker at King of the Ring. That was a good point. And to put him out of action. And then Brother Love says he has a surprise for Mabel. A casket is rolled down. This becomes very dramatic with King on commentary, like, get out of there, Mabel. You know, Mabel looking scared, which I always hate between... I mean, this is like your fat WWF heel staple that he has to be scared of something, whether it's Mabel or Yoko with the casket, Andre with snakes. I mean, you have to be terrified if you're a fat heel in the WWF of something stupid.
You should be terrified of his cholesterol and his blood pressure.
The first Brother Love says he actually has 2 surprises for Mabel. The first surprise is the druid reveals himself as Sir Mo, which that will.
What a surprise! I never expected Mabel's manager to be out here with him.
I mean, why Mabel didn't know that, and why Mo would want to scare his buddy, I don't know, but okay. And then the second surprise is the casket is revealed as having been defaced with graffiti. So I thought this was really lame.
It's awful. It's awful. And they make Mabel look stupid, too, because, like, he thinks Mo turned on him. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay, yeah, the Undertaker's sending Mo out as a druid. It's so stupid. The whole thing is fucking dumb. And Mabel's like, it ain't your business, when he asks where Mo is when they first come out. I feel bad for the guys who are carrying Mabel in the fucking sedan, by the way. Like, I think it's over. They shouldn't be torturing the poor jobbers like this anymore. It's done. Like, it's not worth it. Mabel says he's the first person to pin Undertaker 1-2-3, and the first to put him out of action, and the first to stuff him in his own casket. And I believe all of those things are wrong. All three claims are incorrect. None of them are right. A very Trumpian statement here. They're all was wrong. Because Taker lost to Hogan, right, in the past. And I'm trying to think if he lost to anyone else. But Hogan definitely pinned him 1-2-3. Yoko put him out of action. And Yoko also stuffed him with a casket. So that's 0-3 is Mabel on his claim.
Yeah, I think he mentioned Mexico was going to pay for the casket in your house 5, too. So
And I'm sure he ate all the fucking fast food before.
Yeah, had the Whoppers at the...
I mean, I think Warrior pinned Taker, too, but I'll get the pass on that since I think those are house shows. But Hogan pinned him on pay-per-view, so... So yeah, then we get all the bullshit. Mo comes out as a druid. Mabel thinks he's turned. They show the graffiti. Mabel loves it. There's nobody cares about Mabel, like, except for fucking Emil, whatever the fuck his name is on Twitter. But I mean, no, honestly, nobody else cares about fucking Mabel at this point. It's over. It's over. Like, it's done. Like, there's nothing left.
The other good thing about this was, you know, King knew who Brother Love's guest was going to be.
Right.
But they presented it as a surprise. And it's like, how big of a surprise is it that this fat dude on a, you know, on this processional is out there? Because, you know, when Brother Love says, "Here's my guest," the camera cuts to Mabel, like, halfway down the aisle already. It's like, well, I think we know who his guest is going to be.
It's such a weird time. Like, they're just they're trying with all these guys that it's just not going to happen with. You know what I mean? Like,
this. Yeah.
The problem is the competition is legit now. They can't do this shit like with these guys. Like, this guy's going nowhere. It's no one's believing that he's going to be an Undertaker and kill Undertaker at this point. He's been worthless really since SummerSlam, where he almost murdered Diesel in an 8-minute main event. And other than that, he's done absolutely nothing. And now we're supposed to believe that Undertaker, who just came back from injury and is being positioned for a world title, is no threat. There's no credible threat at all.
No.
You know, he's done nothing. And I don't blame them for not letting him beat Taker up to get heat on him again, because they probably want him nowhere fucking near him after what happened the last time. So it's just, like, aimless. It's just what they're filling time and filling spots with this show and these shows, it feels like, at this point.
Yeah, this role actually felt more, I guess, the disparity between WWF and WCW. I think I felt it more on this Raw than even, like, in October or some of those where, you know, just dreadful Raws.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because even then in WCW, you still had a lot of goofy, you know, the Yeti and the Dungeon of Doom was more prominent. But now that on the WCW side, they're moving kind of away from the Dungeon as an entity, and
right,
the Horsemen are getting more I mean, it feels like their stupidity level's going down.
Yeah, well, the Dungeon sticks around. You'll see. The Dungeon's, I mean, not going anywhere. Yeah, but it's presented more away, but, more threatening. It's not as... They definitely fish out the goofy guys, and, like, it becomes mainly, like, giant. You know, like, it's more sharp.
Yes, you're not seeing Zodiac pop out of a limo right now and just, you know, like, completely just dumb moments like that.
Well, we did see him in the sunroof of the monster truck. That wasn't that long ago.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that was when I thought it was close, because those Raws were bad.
Yes, yes.
But, like, probably worse than these. I ranked them lower. But WCW still had moments like that. And, like, in last week's WCW, this week that we'll talk about, and I've already watched next week, I went straight through. Like, there's just not those moments.
No, it's rough. It's a rough stretch. I had said that they bottomed out, I thought, after in years four, and I still stand by that. I just think we're still at the bottom. we just haven't started to ascend yet, but I don't think these are worse than what we were seeing in October. I don't think.
Maybe not worse, but I guess after Survivor Series and the first Raw after, I was just hoping that we were out of it.
Right, yeah.
These last 2 weeks have been pretty pitiful, and next week's don't look too hot either, so there we go.
And then really, we'll see. Like, until the Rumble, it's almost like just going through the paces with a lot of it, and I think it's after the Rumble is when things finally start to change, I think.
Okay. Kind of a long way to go. Still another month and a half. Dedinsky, our boy.
Yes.
Cardboard standouts this week with Taker and Diesel. $25 a piece for those.
Plus $3.95 shipping and handling. How do you think those came? Do you think they were in pieces? Do you think they were folded up and you had to unfold them?
I didn't think
them?
About that. That's got to be kind of awkward.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm guessing they're folded, but to me that would risk them, like, ripping or breaking.
Yeah, like, I've never gotten a fat head. I assume that's rolled up till you.
Yeah. I guess maybe it could come in, like, a long
tube or something.
Or even just, like, a long flat box. You know, like a thin, very thin, long flat
box.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think my buddy Jim had the Sean one. I'll have to ask him.
Oh, boy.
He was a big Sean mark. I'll have to ask him how it came.
We find out their life size because Barry announces he's only 5'8". So these are both 7 feet tall, as you can see.
He's still got a foot on Trent. But the I think this might be it for Barry. I think he's done after this, sadly.
Oh no. Yeah. I was hoping he'd go out. I still think the Pogs knockoff or whatever was my favorite. Just like dump 200 things on the mat like a bunch of thumbtacks and clean that crap up. Jesus.
We're going to have a death match with Pogs. Yeah, I think that's it. This is it for Dudinsky. So.
Oh, that's sad. I'm all sad.
And a D. Douglas and a Barry D.
These are like our favorites of the first 19 episodes. So now it's our main event of Sid versus Marty Jannetty. Hot start from Marty with a flurry of punches. Sid catches him and then yaps at him. Marty climbs to the top, and we get a glimpse of Razor looking at about the smallest TV I've ever seen in my life. Like, this thing could not have been like an 8-inch TV.
We just bought a TV for my mother-in-law. She she has one for her kitchen. She's probably one of the last people in America that has like the one that hangs under the fucking cabinets. But yeah. The one she has is like dog shit. Like, it's barely holding on. So for her birthday, we got her a new one. And I think that's bigger than this. And that just hangs under the cabinet. this is like the one my grandparents had in their porch in like 1992.
Yeah. I think my phone screen's bigger than this. It was tiny. Back from break, Sid just like obliterates Marty. Marty takes his like inside out bumps off these clotheslines. Marty tries a sunset flip, but he's unable to. Sid catches him with another clothesline. And as he keeps just demolishing Marty, he's getting more and more face pops. Another flurry, and then Sid just throws Jannetty over the top rope. Jannetty goes after DiBiase, and then Kid attacks Marty from behind. Razor comes out to even the score, and Kid and Ted roll into the ring for the DQ. Pretty lame DQ there. Razor punches Sid out of the ring, and then Kid flees through the crowd. Razor chases after him. And did you notice, like, 1-2-3 Kid, he like, jumps from the level down. And, like, you know, Razor's chasing after him. I think he saw the jump that Kid makes, and he thinks better of it because he, like, backpedals and then goes another way to run after him.
The original parkour superstar, the Kid.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like, Kid just sort of flies out of view, and Razor's like, fuck that. And he's running back down. Back in the ring, Sid recovers and powerbombs Marty. And then, of course, DiBiase stuffs money in his mouth. Yeah, so there we go. So I went a star and a half for this gym.
Well, I liked it better than you. I went 2.5. I thought it was fine. Sid, him and DiBiase feel so stale, but Sid's presence is still so like on point when he comes out. Like, he still feels like such a big deal, even though when they're walking out, it just feels like this time capsule back to like May or something. It's just like, oh God, these guys are still going in the same fucking thing. But he's just so engaging as a person that it kind of offsets it. He's clearly fired up from the Survivor Series stuff. So we get Marty's just on fire to open up. And then we get the announcement that Marty and Razor will take on Sid and Kid in your house. So that's a pretty big match there. You mentioned Razor on the little monitor. The stuff with, I thought Kid and Ramon was well done enough. Like, Ramon has shown that he has such a hard on for Kid that he'll show up whenever Kid shows up, which I like. It's like a pretty good continuity piece that we don't get the usual, like, oh, I'll get him next week or I'm waiting in the back. And he's like, anytime Kid is anywhere, Ramon's out there, like, trying to murder him. So, like, I do like that piece of business between those two. I thought the powerbomb was good, the heat was good. And like you said, Sid was getting pops. Marty worked hard, I thought, and Sid had more energy than normal. It didn't seem as cooked, and I thought it was pretty good hype for In Your House for the tag. I do wonder, do you think they had any thought to turn Sid face here at this point? Because, like, why not give it a shot? He's clearly played out as a heel. The crowd obviously loves him. I wonder what stopped them from trying it out.
He's getting the face pops for sure. I mean, I wonder if they hadn't... I don't know. I mean, because, like, I think the reason he gets the biggest face pops is when he obliterates smaller guys.
Right.
And I wonder if they just didn't think that would play as a face quite yet. We'll find
out. It pretty much it pretty much does.
I mean that'll be the archetype is the butt kicking, you know, face is what turns the tide. But at this point in time, I mean, because Taker doesn't really wrestle that way as a face.
Yeah, it just could have been unique, and he's over with Diesel pretty much kind of starting to turn. Like, it seemed like there was a gap there, maybe, where he could have filled. As, like, the, maybe you have backup Sean again, you know, like something like that. Maybe they go back to that well. But I don't think the plans are there, because I think we've talked about it in the past, but him and Kidd were slated for the tag title match at Royal Rumble. It was in the magazine before Sid ended up leaving, so it's. I don't think the plan was there for him to turn, so he was going to be a heel.
Anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
This is something that jumped out at me with the pops he was getting and everything else.
Also, Sid, as he was going to the back, he went, "I didn't mean to do that," and then laughs maniacally.
He's still good. I mean, as played as he is, he's still so good. And he just, you know, when he's energetic like this, it's fun.
This is like between him doing that and Backlund. It's like you're in Aaron's love children were featured prominent tonight. Just being complete nuts. Then it's our kind of main event segment, which is Dr. Unger. So we learned Dr. Unger is Shawn Michaels' physician, and Dr. Unger has a lot to say here.
He's in Chino, by the way. Chino, California.
There we go. Unger says that he sent Shawn back into the ring. That seemed pretty negligent for Dr. Unger, given what Vince said the week before. Unger gives us some head trauma statistics. He says he's not sure when Shawn's coming back. And then he, you know, basically says, well, to me, his wrestling career is insignificant. I'm more concerned with his well-being. Unger says he's not progressing well neurologically, and it may not be safe to go back into the ring at all. So a real buzzkill, Dr. Unger here. And then, I guess Shawn Michaels died because they practically do the immemorial of Shawn here, where we see clips, the piano music cues up. Vince gives us a very somber message about the dangers of wrestling as we see clips of the wrestlers. And, this is just, you talk about laying it on thick. There we go. And then they slowly fade to just clips of Shawn collapsing and all this. And the show ends with Vince saying there is a question as to when or if HBK should return at all.
The Todd was like, you know, he recaps the whole year and talks about how resilient Shawn is. And Unger basically says that shit doesn't matter. He's got brain damage, Todd. I thought that... it was interesting because I feel like the whole thing's kind of ahead of its time. Like, it's crazy to watch them talk about concussions as a storyline because it just wasn't really a thing yet at that point, understanding the severity of concussions. I mean, you knew about them. They were bad. You didn't want one. But they're talking – the way they're talking about it here is, like, they're kind of cutting edge on the impact, and now it's done for story, which is, you know, another argument. But the way they're talking about the impacts and the side effects and everything else is it felt progressive. And I thought it was concise and straightforward. Like, I thought it was really well done until the Vince narration, which to me felt real cheesy and unnecessary, about how superstars are real people and they get hurt and Shawn got here, whether or not, you know, like all that stuff felt a little ham-fisted. But the Unger and Todd parts I thought were really well done to further the story of Shawn and make you wonder if he is finished for good or if he will be back like he's claimed he would be. So I you know, kind of a tale of two stories here in this segment. I like the first half a lot. The Vince narration was cheesy, and it was kind of a somber end to the show. Like you said, it's just kind of sad the way we go out from there.
Well, and it's just, I mean, you got to think about context. Like, if you were watching this live on this night, I mean, you got Savage versus Luger going on one channel with, you know, Eric yelling a mile a minute, the crowd, which we'll get to, you know, hot as could be. And then on the other channel, you got Vince, you know, life of times of Shawn. I mean, it's just, right. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine watching, Raw, but.
So do you feel that this would have been better on, like, Superstars or something?
Maybe, or even just not at the end of the show. Like, I mean, they've really been hitting the head with this Shawn angle. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they definitely probably knew where they were going for Mania at yep. this point. So they're gearing up for that. So I understand the long-term storytelling, and I enjoy what they're doing, but I don't know. And like I said, like I just thought that this Raw not having any of their three biggest stars, there was a void there. Like I just don't think if Razor Ramon's the biggest star you have on a show, because no Undertaker either. Mm-hmm. So if Razor's the biggest star you have on a given show, he's just not enough star power to, you know, combat with Hogan, Flair, Savage, Luger, Sting. I mean, I'd put Razor below Sting at this point.
Oh yeah.
On the star level metric. So you got five people on the other channel bigger than your biggest. And it's glaring. So I guess we can get into our awards on that note.
So you ended it. You ended it just as somberly as Vince did.
We're not sure whether Raw will ever recover in this wrestling war zone.
Yeah, it's they're in a weird spot, and they clearly are, for whatever reason, not feeling the urgency to press on, and whatever reason that is. I don't know if it's because they've already booked all this stuff, like arenas and whatnot. Like, I don't like that they just weren't prepared to move toward a live format, but even then, they could make these taped Raws, like to your point, more energetic. I mean, Bill Watts ran some of the best TV in history, so did NWA, and all that shit was taped. You know what I mean? So, like, there's ways to do it if you do it right. And WWF did it, I'd argue, taped. Like, I mean, it's fine. You can do it, but you can't, like I said, you can't take weeks off with your stars missing and just, like, pushing storylines every other week. Like, you're just not going to win that way when, like you mentioned, WCW's rolling out their top guys and matches every week, and they're big names. Hogan, Savage, Luger, Sting, Flair. Like, all those guys are on TV every week doing shit, you know? It's just... Like, think of what that would mean for WWF at this point. You'd be having matches between Bret and Shawn, Bret and Undertaker, Undertaker and Shawn. Like that's what the equivalent would be, which seems crazy, right? It seems crazy to think about, like, them doing that in late 95. But that's where Nitro was at, and that's how far behind they are.
Right. So your match of the night was, what, Sid versus Marty?
Yeah, yeah.
I went Bob Holly versus British Bulldog. Your segment, what was that?
I went with Unger. I mean, I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I did the Unger update on Sean. MVP.
Bobby Backlund, baby.
God. Oh, man.
He was fine. He did his role okay. I mean, it's not his fault they put him in that spot.
I didn't know. I didn't really know who to pick. I kind of went Razor through default, but I don't feel great about it. So, I don't know. That's a soft MVP.
Yeah.
What do you have for commentary?
Just buckle up your chinstrap, McMahon. You're in for some necessary roughness from the King. That's about it.
Are we considering Unger a debut?
Yeah,
here?
Yeah. Because I don't think we're done with him. So, yeah, I put him as a debut.
The rating was a 2.6, so up 0.3 from the week before. And what was your overall grade on this one?
I went 4.5 out of 10.
Okay, I did 3.5 last week. I thought this was even worse than that because it didn't have the good Joshi match, so I went 3 out of 10. I mean, again, I'm just really struggling with Raw right now. So yeah. We'll see.
You're not made out for that style. You're not cut out for it.
So now we hop over to something, in my mind, much more exciting. Mm-hmm. Nitro. Phoenix, Arizona, which I thought was an interesting area.
It's a home of stomach bugs.
You just don't, I don't know. Like, at this point in time, you don't really associate Phoenix much with wrestling. So
yeah.
Kind of interesting. They're sort of all over, more sprawling, it feels like, than the Northeast WWF. Eric has a Southwest motif on his shirt. And Pepe has the angel halo and wings. So a nice combo for Pepe.
Right out of the gate, baby. All dogs go to heaven.
Right out of the gate, we hear it's Luger versus Savage for the WCW title. And then they've already announced a Starrcade Triangle match with Sting, Flair, and Luger. And then we also hear that the Giant, Hogan, and Flair are all on probation. the executive committee. I guess had a.
I would have paid to see that executive committee just once. We never see them. I just want to see what it looks like. Do they
an emergency meeting?
Right. Do they all convene to a boardroom? Do they do it over the phone? Like, do they need a quorum? Like, I want to know what the other minutes published. Like, what does these meetings look like? Do I picture like people just rushing over to the CNN towers for, to get around the boardroom to talk about Hulk Hogan being suspended?
Well, Eric said they were there, so I must have done it in catering or something. But And he said like approximately 48 minutes ago too, or something like that. It was like a very exact time. It was
hot breaking news. Hulk Hogan is on probation.
Yeah, so I will criticize WCW booking that they announced a triangle match, and I mean, like, where's Hogan?
Well, he's on probation.
Well, so is Flair, but he's in the triangle match.
Hogan's probation is more severe.
Okay. I did think that was kind of a weird...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know eventually where this game's going, but, I mean, then don't announce the triangle. You know, just say, right, like, you know, all these people are in the mix at Starrcade. I don't know. It's kind of like they didn't have enough time to do what they wanted storyline, because I understand, like, for Starrcade, you wanted to, you know, you want to announce what your main event angle is going to be beyond the New Japan versus WCW thing. But hey, I did want to ding them a little bit for that. Our first match is American Males versus Harlem Heat. And then I got a Mongo line where they announced the Giant versus Scott Norton for later. Mongo says, that's like going to Pompalone and getting in the way of the Bulls, baby. So he was, he like the way he pronounces Pamplona, Spain is it's like Pamplona is pretty
it's like
humorous.
Papa John's Pamplona.
So Stevie looked good early on with punches and an impact sidewalk slam. Booker eats forearm and shoulder block from Bagwell. Thought Bagwell also looked good. The males work together, teaming up. They do a double backflip to Stevie and then start working over Booker. Sunset flip gets two for the males. Colonel Robert Parker's on the ramp with a present for Sister Sherry. Bobby thinks it's a rock inside the present. Riggs charges in and eats the post. And then we get a power slam from Stevie Ray as Parker gives the gift to Sherry. And I mean, it was a ring, but it was also like this weird, I couldn't tell if this was like supposed to be a veil or I don't know what that was. It was kind of like a veil, but anyway, it was a ring. They kissed,
was it a,
they lived together.
Was it a promise ring? You think Austin Aries gave it to him?
I don't know. Oh man. Hey, he took a beating the past week. But so they lead together. It was funny, Booker, as they were leaving together, Booker was like, Sherry, Sherry, you know, on the apron,
right,
calling for Sherry. Riggs gets beat up in the ring. It seems like we show AC Green in the crowd,
yes,
from the Phoenix Suns, and he's jawing with Harlem Heat.
Was he still a virgin at this point?
Good Lord. Riggs' hope spots are pin attempts. Like, that's all his hope spots are. Double front suplex from Harlem Heat. That got a nice pop from the crowd. Bagwell gets the hot tag. He has some nice strikes. I thought Bagwell looked good in this match, actually. He gets caught, and they do lose focus for a little bit. But then Booker T goes up, hits the Harlem Hangover. He gets a huge pop from the crowd.
Yeah.
And that gets the win. So this was a nice lengthy tag title match here to start out Nitro. I thought it was pretty good. You know, nothing extraordinary, but was probably the best showcase match we've seen given to Harlem Heat. And they looked good here, and the males looked pretty good too as your white meat babyface team. So I went 2.25.
Yeah, me too. 2.25. You got to think at some point they're starting to angle Bagwell for something bigger than this. Like, they're showcasing him here. It's, you know, I don't think it comes for a little bit still, but you got to feel like at some point they're starting to edge toward it. It feels like he's spinning his wheels now with the males. I do like that Bischoff reminded us of them upsetting Harlem Heat back on the third Nitro, if you remember. American Males won the tag titles in that surprise. So that was a nice touch that he brought
that
up. I like that he talked about that. Bobby talks about how people in the Wild West talk, because that's where we are in Phoenix, because it's, whatever, 1875, apparently. So we're out in the Wild West. Bischoff talks about Stevie's bum ankle that could go at any time and swing the match. I thought that was a nice piece of psychology as well. Also very interesting is Bagwell's frosted tips. I feel like he's ahead of the game a little bit. Like, I feel like he's a couple years ahead on the frosted tips. I'll give him that, but not digging it. Yeah, we got the diamond. Sherry, as she opens it, Mongo thinks it's a rattlesnake in there. So continuing the Southwest jokes. Sherry loves the gift, but Bobby said that Parker had to eat a lot of cereal to get that ring, which I thought was pretty funny. Parker and Sherry are canoodling on the floor. Eric said they went on air early tonight because it's such a packed show. When we were talking about this off air, you know, I think they did just kind of cut in. I think they were just trying to make it seem unpredictable and, like, get the jump on Raw. So I'm thinking like 8:55 or something. Maybe they'd probably just fired up and cut in and started just to make some things seem unpredictable and keep you on TNT, or, you know, realize you got to be over there in case they start.
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly doing some different things. Mm-hmm. As we'll get to, they also run long. I mean, on the network, the Raw's right at 45 minutes, and this Nitro's at 55.
Yeah.
So it's 10 minutes longer. So they were really – I mean, I think you know, that's kind of like a vote of confidence from TNT, mm-hmm. that, you know, they've gotten over the proof of concept in the first, 13 episodes, or, you know, and shown they can be competitive, and they're giving Bischoff some more rope, and he's taking advantage of it. I mean, anything he can do to make the product seem more exciting, he's really doing. And I think that takes a lot of forethought. I mean, I mm-hmm. think he's doing stuff already you see that Vince is not. And I mean, maybe with some of the shots fired and stuff like that, maybe he's not stooping to Vince's level, although with Billionaire Ted starting up, you know, right. You know. But I mean, he's certainly aggressive, at the very least, and trying his best.
Yep. No, I agree. AC Green in the crowd is just kind of a touch. Like, they're also very good about this, like, really showcasing their – and this will become a thing for them.
But, oh, yeah.
Showcasing their celebrities and athletes that are there and, like, putting over how cool and in tune WCW is with pop culture and sports. So they showcase him. He's yelling at Booker. I thought Bagwell looked good. He had good shiner and the hot tag. Bischoff even mentions how jacked up he's getting, too. So, again, like, it seems like they're putting some focus on him over Riggs. I thought it was a fine opener for Harlem Heat. They looked sharp. They were smooth as a team. Stiff offense. Males were game as well, so a decent little chemistry of these two teams. And again, rematch from that third Nitro where Harlem Heat won the belts. I want to look quick about what we have that as a rating on there. So it would have been, what, 925?
Either 918 or 925.
Yeah, it was 918. So we actually didn't like that one as much. You want a star and a quarter, I want a star and a half.
Yeah, I mean, I think this one definitely was longer.
Yeah.
It feels longer. I mean, that felt like that was kind of quickie. So, I thought this was a pretty good match, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a good opener.
Yeah, Mongo gets in his, almost like with the Where the Big Boys Play count, I'm going to have to do the Mongo shots fired where he, you know, he says, you're not going to see action like that anywhere else. I can assure you that, ladies and gentlemen. So, of course, always
jabbing.
Pumps that out a couple times a show. Then our next thing, I think, was the Sting and Lex Luger interview with Gene.
Mm-hmm.
The Phoenix crowd was really hot.
It's the Wild West, Chad. They're crazy out there.
I mean, it just – this again, maybe it's because I'm used to these malign Raw crowds that are sitting through their third hour. But, I mean, it's just night and day. And Sting yells at them, gets them even more fired up. Sting says he wants Luger without Jimmy Hart. Sting says Hart is the business part of the deal, but they've been friends for 10 years, best friends for 10 years. And then he says just because he is his best friend, he will still come after him the same way to get the belt in the triangle match. And at the very beginning, Sting says, you know, I got a feeling you may become world champion tonight. So Lex agrees with his predictions and says he will be the champion tonight and that he'll also go after Sting just like anybody else in the triangle match. So pretty good interview between these two, kind of showing,
yeah,
you know, continuing the storyline here.
Yeah, the complexities of their friendship with the title on the line, with Jimmy Hart in the way, but Sting's still trying to stay the course and trust his friend and basically saying, yeah, I'll see you at Starrcade in the title match.
Right. I did think it was funny where after the interview, Sting's music is already started and he starts to walk back and then realizes, oh, I'm not going to get a full entrance, and just kind of wanders to the ring. So that was funny. And then we get a little shots fired from Eric. So our second match is Sting versus Kurosawa. Eric says everybody else is paying the bills, but you're getting action here. Yeah, so yeah, I guess he knew they were in a commercial break.
Yeah, he was. Which is kind of cool. I'm pretty sure he had the monitor, right? Isn't that the story that Bischoff would have the monitor right there so he could real time kind of give updates on what was going on Raw?
Sting sends Kurosawa to the outside, but he comes back quickly. Bobby says he's missing Colonel Parker, and that's why he's a little out of sorts. Kurosawa's going after the arm. He does a nasty arm breaker at one point. Sting fires back after a second, and then gets the Stinger Splash, Scorpion Deathlock, and that is it as Kurosawa taps out. Bobby says sayonara at the end of the match, so had to throw that in there. Eric talks about Sting on a roll. I mean, this was a 2-minute match. I enjoyed it for what it was, but I mean, it was a 2-minute match, so I only went a star here.
Yeah, I want to start with 3/4. I don't know. I really.
Oh boy!
Yeah,
the Kurosawa love.
The Kurosawa mark. I love Bischoff calling Jimmy a maggot as usual. He's got to get that one in as always. mentions the probation for Flair, John, and Hogan. I thought Sting got a hot start. Makes a quick comeback after Kurosawa works the arm for a minute, and then the Scorpion. I wish this went longer. It was like just getting cooking before the quick finish. And I'm not gonna dock him for 2 minutes. I enjoyed it. Sting has been on fire. He's been really good over the last, what, month or so since the Flair turn, pretty much?
I would say since the Flair turn and how he handled that. I mean, like getting beat up and showing fire in that Havoc match.
Yeah, he's
probably been their most consistent performer.
So much energy and excitement and just really flying high. I liked it. I dug the segment. I've dug Sting and Luger. It's been my favorite part of Nitro for sure. And Kurosawa was always fun, of course.
They go over the concept for Starrcade, which was good. Mm-hmm. So now that's set up with the World Cup. And then our WCW Saturday Night matches. On the mothership this week, we have Disco Inferno versus Johnny B. Badd. Brian Pillman and Chris Benoit in tag team action. Hugh Morris. Then a big main event, Big Bubba versus Eddie Guerrero.
There you go.
Actually could be kind of fun.
Yeah.
I wrote this down. I don't know if this was Mongo or Bobby Heenan, but one of them said, "May the force be with Eddie Guerrero." It's kind of just an awkward line.
Sounds like a Mongo.
Probably Mongo. Yeah. Sounds like a Mongo.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Then that leads us into our big Hoss matchup, which is the Giant versus Scott Flash Norton. Giant gets Pyro.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're still playing up Andre or not, but Mongo does mention you could take Andre's strength and times it by 2. So
yeah, it's not done yet because they're still talking about it. It's definitely not
okay.
Over.
Okay,
it goes longer than I thought. I really thought it was like a month and then they were done, but they're still pushing it.
So if you take like Giant's 14-second match or whatever with Cobra the night after, I think it was Havoc. This is his first Nitro match, so it's kind of a pretty big deal.
Yeah,
definitely first competitive one. Eric, I thought, did a good job putting over Scott Norton as how tough he was being a bouncer, the arm wrestling champion, all that stuff. And then Eric makes the announcement that Hogan and Sting are teaming up next week to face Arn Anderson and Flair. That's a big main event.
Yep.
I was excited about that. Giant slams Norton early. Norton comes back and gets Giant up with an atomic drop. I got another huge pop from the crowd. Eric really threw out the where the big boys play in this match. We got 2 of them from it. Norton rakes the eyes and then follows up, sending Giant into the turnbuckle. Eric is already warning that, you know, they're going to probably go over the hour mark here, so preparing the audience for that. And then Scott goes to the top rope. He gets caught there, and then there's a huge choke slam, and that is it. So I enjoyed this. Another probably 3-minute match, but a lot of great beefy Hoss action. I went 1.5 stars on this one.
I went 2 on this bad boy.
There you go.
interesting power match. Yes, that is a huge main event. They announced for next week. Should be a big one. Giant is swatting Norton around and throwing him around with ease. It's like super impressive given how big Norton was. So I thought that was a cool spectacle for Giant. I like the atomic drop. That was a neat spot with Giant selling it. I really dug that. Like you mentioned, Bischoff says that they may go past 10, and WCW and TNT are committed to show you everything. So he's already teasing they'll go long. And then the finish was great, too. The choke slam was huge. This is a really fun spectacle power match. It's a good way to showcase Giant's power and how big he is. And I thought it was a nice use of Norton, who's been protected pretty well. So 2 stars for me. I love me a big, short powerhouse sprint, and we get one here.
Next, we get a very interesting interview where it's Ric Flair with Charles Barkley.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, a huge star showing WCW's help. They got the big star.
Charles is looking svelte here, by the way.
Yes. So, Charles actually gets heel heat for backing Flair here. And you know, he a couple times, like, Gene asked him if he's going to come into the ring and stuff like that. And he's like, I'm always going to back my boy, the Nature Boy, and mm-hmm. all this. And Flair strutting around. I mean, they just, it's a fun interview segment with these two. And then Flair at the end says that Charles may just quit the NBA and become a horseman full time. You know, he just loves saying that and yeah. starts strutting around. So there you go. I mean, I thought this was a lot of fun to watch. It makes WCW look big time, and Flair's great. And
Barkley's
really
big.
Handles his own.
I mean, Barkley was a massive star at this point.
Oh, yeah.
It was huge. Like, 93 years his MVP year. So, you know, right. not even, whatever, year and a half removed from that. excuse me. No, this is a really fun promo. You know, Flair says him and Charles are going to tear up the town tonight, which I'm sure they probably fucking did. Charles, you know, he puts over the Suns fans and local wrestling fans in Phoenix, and then says they should all appreciate Flair, and then gets booed for that.
Gets booed.
But no, I dug it. It's a really nice usage of a celebrity. It's quick. You're in and out. You might as well. Charles is a known wrestling fan, known friend of Flair, so I thought it was a good use of him in his hometown.
And you gotta love Flair. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, he gets involved at the end, but I mean, he did not do much tonight. So you gotta love him getting flown in for this, and then like you said, I'm sure he tore it up on the on the town. We go to the announce booth real quick. Now Bobby has a chip bag, and inside of it is like I knew that as it's called a rascal from what I saw on the infomercial. It's basically like an electronic little critter that mm-hmm. rolls around, but he kept going back to that, and Mongo kept calling it a weasel. It was kind of a lame gag that they had back and forth the whole night. So it was whatever. And I think it's time for our big main event.
Mm-hmm. Huge title match. Which,
yes. So it's Randy Savage versus Lex Luger. Really nice Luger jacket from Jimmy Hart mm-hmm. as he comes out. Luger has the fire pyro. Giant also had pyro. So they were really breaking out the pyro here. I didn't think they didn't make enough mention of the Giants' attack the week before on
right.
Savage.
Yeah,
I thought they kind of downplayed that.
Right, Bobby kind of mentions should've. Bobby mentions that Savage's arm and back are bad, but Bischoff says it doesn't matter, which is weird.
Right, right.
But I agree. But also, by the way, Bischoff calls Jimmy Hart a backstabbing maggot.
Mongo also tells us to get to the bathroom and flush the remote because you don't want to miss this. So.
I mean, you can just put it aside, right? You have to flush it.
Flush it.
I mean, not only are you destroying the remote, you're also probably destroying your toilet. So it's a very destructive move. Yes.
Yes. A fast start is Luger goes after the arm. Luger goes for the double axe handle to the outside, and Savage punches him in the stomach. That looked good. I thought they really went back and forth here with more intensity than in their previous matches mm-hmm. as we head to our first break. We come back. Luger is honed in on the arm, but Savage is doing some good comebacks protecting that arm.
But Luger doesn't work the arm for a while, and Bobby kind of calls him out on it. He's like, why isn't he going after the arm? Why isn't he going after the arm? And then, like you said, when they come back, he's on it. But
right. And then actually Savage starts going after Luger's arm.
Yep.
Wraps it around the guardrail. Savage has like an arm submission, and he wraps the arm around the post.
Mm-hmm.
Small package gets a 2 count for the Macho Man. We learn that Flair has a bye at Starrcade, so like he's not in the World Cup. Which again is kind of weird, like why they would decide he has the bye if he's on probation, but I digress.
And you got like Sting and Luger. If Luger doesn't win here, like they're going possibly three times because they're in the World Cup. Right. Then they have to win the triple threat to get to the title match. So you're putting them potentially in you know, three matches.
Yeah, it kind of didn't make a lot of sense. Savage posts Luger again. Savage then goes for the double axe handle from the apron, but Luger moves out of the way. Savage goes flying into the guardrail, and now Luger really attacks. Eric starts pleading with the audience to stay after the hour. Savage takes a shot at Randy Anderson when he's been blinded, kind of had his eyes right, so he's just sort of swinging wobbly and hits Pee-wee. I thought Luger's selling of the arm was really good. He was not using that on offense. Mm-hmm. He had it dangled off to the side. Did a really good job. Jimmy Hart is absolutely losing his mind on the outside. It's such a contrast to Ted doing nothing on WWF.
Parva's jerking it watching Ted walk around on the side.
You don't think of late 95 Jimmy Hart as like the zenith of his managerial abilities, but he's been really good. Mm-hmm.
I think he was re-energized. He had spent two plus years as just Hogan's lapdog, like as a face, wacky. I think he was like re-energized to be a dastardly, little douchebag prick heel again.
Then we get our final kind of shots fired of the night, where Eric says, "You want to watch wrestling? You want to watch people talk about wrestling? If you want action, it's right here." So that's probably going on when Unger was yapping. Double shoulder block and both are out. This was another good one. So they talk about it. WCW, our wrestlers work through the pain.
Yes, yes, that was a good dig.
Good lord. And then Eric is like, "Well, you can relate to that, right, Mongo?" And Mongo says, "No, actually, the wrestlers are tougher than NFL players because right. NFL players will sit out." So that was good. A lot of back and forth on the floor. Mm-hmm. People using the guardrail in this match. And then once they get back in, we see that Jimmy Hart is taking the turnbuckle pad off. Luger is sent into that, and then Randy Anderson takes a bump. Savage is able to hit the big elbow. He would have had the pin, but there's no ref there. Savage grabs Jimmy Hart, but then Flair runs in with the brass knuckles and is strutting around. I thought Flair was awesome here, hitting Savage and then doing his little dance. Jimmy Hart puts Luger on top of Savage and then goes to get Pee-wee Anderson. But out comes Hogan, of course. And Hogan comes behind Ric Flair on the ramp. Hogan does get a full face pop this week from the Phoenix crowd. Mm-hmm. And Hogan goes into the ring and breaks up the count. And Pee-wee calls for the DQ. Hulk then grabs Hart and also kind of wipes out Pee-wee as he does that. And sends Luger and Jimmy Hart together. They talk about, wait a minute, Hulk's on probation, so he shouldn't have done that. Sting then comes out, and Hogan accidentally socks him. They start shoving each other back and forth. They go nose to nose. The crowd's really revved up for this, going crazy. And then Savage gets in between them, and they end up going to break with Chaos. So, you know, we haven't really dug one of these matches between these two yet.
No.
I thought this was easily the best one. Given a lot of time, I think I looked on Cage Match, this ended up being about 13 minutes. Mm-hmm. So this was given just a lot of time, but I thought for the most part it delivered. I enjoyed it and ended up going 3.25 here.
Okay, I went 3 stars. I liked it too, and I've been pretty negative on their chemistry as opponents, Savage and Luger. I've not really enjoyed anything they've done so far, but this one I liked a lot. I thought the arm work on both sides was really, really tight. They really focus on the injuries that Savage has been selling for weeks, whether they're real or not. We're still trying to figure out. I like all the probation stuff, too. Like, Savage almost hits the ref at one point, and they say, you know, his probation's lingering over his head. And then Hogan comes out, he hits the ref, and now he might be in trouble. So they're at least putting some logic behind why the probation and, like, how these guys are teetering on the edge because they've been out of control, just beating on whoever they want during all these wild brawls. Yeah, but overall, I really liked it. I thought it was good, focused arm work. The finish made a lot of sense. The crowd popped for everything. I think the only thing they really missed was the heated segment at the end to go to the next step. I think we kind of get the Hogan and the Jimmy stuff instead of like a real hot finish, which I think could have bumped this even more. But as it was good. It focuses on the injured, you know, arm, and it also pushes along the storyline. And I think the Phoenix crowd has remembered Hogan getting beat up by King Kong Bundy back on that Saturday Night event, so they felt bad for him still. But no, this is a pro-Hogan crowd. We've seen it week to week that it oscillates between them hating him or them loving him, and Phoenix is pro-Hogan at this point. So.
And then, so that's it of the match. Afterwards, when they come back from break, we get the big interview with Mean Gene. Mean Gene tells Hulk he was on probation and touched another referee. Macho says to Sting straight up and to be straight up. And then Sting says, look, I'm on your side. Hulk wants to know what's going on with Luger. So paranoid Hulk again. Sting tells him that he's mixed up right now with Jimmy Hart, but he doesn't run out on his friends. And then Hulk requests that he keeps Luger out of his face. Sting says he will do everything in his power to do that. So that's sort of how the segment ends.
This is one of my all time favorite segments, honestly, in like WCW history. Jim and I would like just like quote the shit out of this one, like this over and over. When it comes on, like I perk up and I message him right away because I love it so much. I'm straight up. I'm on your side. He's trying to straighten out Luger. He's all mixed up with Jimmy. Sting says he questioned Savage this time, but he's not gonna. But he ain't going down to him, so why does Hulk have to down Luger every week? And then Hogan gets his classic, we'll have to digress, as some idiots may say. Which is a fucking random line. Savage says he predicted Luger would be with Jimmy. Savage is straight up. Sting says Lex's fuse is shorter, and he didn't get the opportunity he wanted. Sting said he despises Flair and Arn. But Hogan says, keep Luger out of my face! Sounds like a reasonable request for a tag team partner. That's Gene says that. And Sting says, I'll do everything to keep Luger out of your face and out of my face. And there's all that stuff. It's just, everything is so good. I love it all. It was hyped. It recapped everything. I thought they did a great job setting up the main event for next week. If we can trust Hogan and Sting. And this is just one of my all time favorites. It's so quotable. Everything they say is like burned into my skull. So I love it.
Oh yeah. This was quite the segment here. And then the announcers wrap it up. Bobby says the handshake was weak between Sting and Hogan. Mongo tells Bobby to stick his face in the potato chip bag. And then Eric wraps us up and we're out. 10 minutes late as Meltzer let us know. Mm-hmm. So they went 10 minutes over. So let's get into our awards for this Nitro.
Okay.
What did you have as match of the night? The main event?
Yeah, Savage Luger.
Yeah. And then your segment of the night?
Obviously, it was the last one. It's one of my all-time favorites.
Flair Barkley is actually a pretty strong number two.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's a really good one. On any other night, that might have been it, but this is just too good for
me. Yeah, I go with the final segment as well, but wanted to make a mention of that. Your MVP?
Sting.
I went Luger here.
Yeah.
I thought he was good in the promo, and then I think we've liked the character work of Luger, but I don't think we thought the in-ring has kind of caught up that. And, mm-hmm. I mean, this is probably his best match in, God, I don't know when, maybe 94?
Yeah.
90, in over a year, probably. So I was proud to see Lex deal it out here. What commentary lines did you have?
Just the one I really noted. We just had some of those we talked about. But Mongo saying, I can't see her as being a June bride about Sherry.
Right. I kind of went over the shots fired. There was a good many this episode.
Yeah, the two big ones I had mentioned was the everyone's paying the bills, and then we work through pain, just like the NFL.
So. That was pretty good. This drew a 2.6 as mm-hmm. well. So they tied. Which is kind of disheartening to me, given the shows that they were together.
But it always lags.
Yeah, they at least tied, and Meltzer did say they picked up an extra 0.2 running over, so mm-hmm. it seems like that was a good strategy. And what was your overall grade here?
6 out of 10.
I had the same grade. I thought this was a good, solid Nitro. We didn't get I liked the match with Luger and Savage a lot. And I like the tag match. I may have even ranked this a little low. I don't really have any complaints about this Nitro. I enjoyed it. And like I said, I was so kind of enthralled in what happened next, I went right through and started the next one right away, even though it was, you know, 24 years ago. So that's a compliment to the product as well.
No, it was a really good episode. You're right. I mean, we probably could have went 6.5-ish. I just, when I looked, I think I'm a little boxed in with some of my other grades, like in the past. Like, so I don't think it was better than like some of the best nitros we've seen. So I just kind of rank it here, but it was a real good one. Like, to me, a 6 and over to me is, a really good
watching.
Show. Yeah, it's a really good show. Below that, you tread between unwatchable and then whatever, you know, unoffensive.
Maybe a highlight, All right, so let's do our combined awards, and we'll wrap this episode up. Match of the night for both shows. Are you saying Savage versus Luger?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Segment of the night for both shows, the ending thing of Nitro?
Yep.
Okay. MVP, we were kind of all over the place here.
Yeah, and I mean, Sting was my favorite between the two nights, but you want to give him Luger? Is that cheap?
Okay.
Because they worked together a lot.
Yeah. I definitely would argue, for Luger, just because he had the longest match. So. Yeah.
Okay. And the ratings was tied, you said, right?
Ratings is tied. Commentary, I thought, was closer this week.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get annoyed, though, I will say, by the Nitro, like their pot shots, like I sometimes do. To me, it wasn't too grating.
No, well, when they work them in and they're creative and funny, you know, like it's cool. Like I don't like when they're forced and like he's trying too hard, but like I thought these are pretty accurate. And like he just kind of wove them in, like, hey, they're on break, we have action, you know, like that was real. And like our guys worked through injury. You're watching a whole thing about this guy who can't compete, but our guy's Savage out here half dead and he's competing. So I thought they made sense.
All right, so we want to say Nitro was better there.
Yeah,
okay. So, and that's it, right?
And Nitro overall, the show.
So. Oh, yeah. Nitro overall, definitely. Yeah. So,
and tie,
clean
tie
sweep again.
Tie rating.
Tie rating, okay. But with the overrun, they kind of jumped a little bit ahead. So, a clean sweep,
pretty much. So, next week we'll be back, or next episode, actually, we'll be back with the week of 12/11. We'll start with Nitro, and then we'll hit the Go Home Raw for In Your House, the final pay-per-view of the year for WWF. And before you know it, Chad, we'll be out of 95. It's coming. We're getting close.
Thankfully.
But it's been a lot of fun so far. So hopefully everyone's enjoying us here. And also, eventually, you'll be hearing us on the Kevin Kelly Podcast League feed, which you should subscribe to. It's available on iTunes and pretty much all other podcast apps, right down to Spotify and beyond. And what that entails is the 5-minute Kevin Kelly podcast, which airs daily, drops around noon Eastern. Kevin brings you 5 minutes, could be thoughts on New Japan, could be thoughts on WWE, AEW. Today he had an interview with Jay White, the Switchblade, which was really cool. And then there's also part of that feed. We're going to have a monthly pay-per-view instant reaction shows called Chain Reaction from Nate Milton with a roundtable. So for the Royal Rumble, him and Jennifer Smith broke that down right after the show ended, and the show and the podcast was up that night. So that'll be a feature on that feed. And then, Chad, you and I are on that feed as well here on the Wrestling War Zone, starting from scratch. So starting with episode 1, we'll be on that feed for anyone new that hasn't heard us before just trying to, you know, beef out the feed a little bit, gave some additional exposure. So if you're listening to us now and it's the summer, thank you for joining us. Hopefully you enjoyed this one. But anyway, subscribe to that feed. It's a lot of fun. Kevin does great work. He's very in tap and in tune with everything going on. So it's a quick listen, 5 minutes a day. I think you can spare it with all the other crap you consume. So do that. Also subscribe to Place of Nation Wrestling. We'll have a new Place to Be podcast coming up next week, Chad. Me and Scott will be joined by Mr. D'Amato to look at Royal Rumble 1989. So looking forward to that. Also, I mentioned the new show we had, Talking WCW, with Arn Anderson being the focus there. We should have a new Where the Big Boys Play from the Vault back up this weekend coming up as well. I think that's it from that feed. Anything else you got going on you want to talk about?
I think that's it. Okay. We had a... You Don't Know Billy Jack.
Yes.
Episode 2 dropped last week. That was on a kind of interesting match where it's a gauntlet match from New Japan Pro Wrestling in 1984. And I think it's a match that even like your New Japan hardcores that have came on board in the past 4 or 5 years have not watched. And is definitely worth watching. It's probably for my money. I may like a 1986 elimination match better, but it's one of probably the four or five best New Japan matches of all time in my mind. Maybe even two or three, because I do rank it at 5 stars, and there's just not a ton of those.
All right, we'll check that out. And also subscribe to the PTBN Pop feed. That's available on iTunes as well. There's a new Talkin' Pop with Mr. D'Amato, which is getting a lot of love and praise out there for interesting topics that Johnny delved into about his life. And there was also NBA team midseason outlook podcast this week in the NFL's up. I'm sure they'll have their Super Bowl preview coming this week as well. Plenty of other shows for those into the world of pop culture and sports. So final plug is for bigelow34.popbars.com, our message board. You can join in on the Year That Was 1996 project. There's a playlist you can join in on, give your thoughts on those matches and moments. And also the results of the GWE tag team project are dropping. I think we're into like 150 range now. The posts are up there as well, so you can find that and share your thoughts as those continue to drop. I'm guessing probably another week and a half we'll be to number one, so keep an eye on that. Twitter, Place Number Two Nation. Instagram, Place Number Two Nation. facebook.com/placenumbernation. That's Chad. I'm JT. We're out. Talk to you next time. Good night.